What's up, y'all? Will here at Schedulefly. And this is an episode not with a customer, but with a company that we think is doing some really cool stuff. And we like their product. We like their culture. We like the people that we've interacted with there quite a bit. And their name is Arrived. A-R-R-Y-V-E-D. Arrived.com. It's mobile POS software. They're out of Boulder, Colorado, and I had a fortunate opportunity to sit down with Lauren Bendel, who is the CEO. Came on as CEO this year in early 2022, and on a snowy mid-morning in November, a few weeks back when I was out there, Lauren was kind enough to hang out with me, and we chatted for probably an hour about his story and, more importantly, about Arrive's story and most importantly, what they're doing to add value to their customers and help their customers' businesses be successful. And this is a cool story. I mean, this company was started just like 5 years ago, I think 2017. A couple of guys, tech guys, as they, you know, they say tech geeks who love craft beer, or maybe beer geeks who love tech. That's on their website. I was just checking that out. I thought that was cool. But so Arrived is, you know, today serves, I can't remember how many thousand, but lots of thousands of breweries and, you know, distilleries, beverage forward, businesses. And they make it very easy to interact, with your customers and for your customers to interact with your business in that environment. And of course, you know, they're continuing to grow their technology and what they provide, and you know, will eventually serve restaurants and they do serve some restaurants, but you know, it's really geared towards, primarily sort of beverage forward places. They do extraordinarily well for breweries. That's what it was built for. We think Arrive's going to be a big player in the game of POS, in the coming years, not just in that beverage forward world, but nevertheless, check out this story. These are great people. They are all from hospitality. I think like literally like most, if not all the people on their team, and their team is pretty big now, have worked in hospitality, certainly the folks that are serving their customers. So you literally have, you know, former bartenders selling to and servicing bars and restaurants. All right. Well, we're recording. So I am here today in Boulder at the headquarters of Arrived with CEO Lauren Bendel. Lauren, thanks for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's just dive right in, man. Tell us the story of Arrived.
Yeah. All right. So Arrived's, we launched, I believe it was in 2017. So I joined the company about a year and a half ago. So I can give you some of the history, but no, it's not directly from the people that started it.
Yeah, it's all good.
And I can brag on a lot of the stuff they did with no ego because I wasn't involved with it. But they did a lot of great things from the beginning. Our roots were in the payments space from Google. So super talented engineers that love technology and also love beer. So they had the vision way ahead of their time of being able to build technology that allowed guests to be able to order and pay from their phone. And they started talking with local breweries, and they all said, well, the big problem we have is our point-of-sale systems are horrible. They don't work. They're too complicated. We can't get anybody on the phone. You really should build another point-of-sale system. So, and they said, you can't do the guest ordering stuff until you do that anyway. So they worked here with Avery Brewing in Boulder, Colorado, and set up shop basically at the brewery and built the system in conjunction with Avery. And Avery's a fantastic local brewery here, sells nationwide, great beer, great operation, and great hospitalitarians who really, you know, care about their guests and care about their product. So they built the point of sale system with them, for them, and launched with Avery, launched with Rayback here in Boulder as well, and very quickly figured out they had something special, and in a short order of time got half the brewers in Colorado running their system. And then now we've expanded nationwide. We're in all 50 states. I think we have about 17% of all breweries across the country, and in certain pockets where we've really focused, like I think South Carolina, I think we're at 35% of all the breweries, and just a really well-loved point-of-sale system. But beyond that, just product in general and team. This team is awesome. They did some really smart things from the beginning. You know, back in the beginning when they couldn't really afford to recruit and hire high-end tech support people, they said, well, let's just train bartenders and servers to do it. They know the industry. They know hospitality.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They have that hospitality and service DNA. Plus, they know point-of-sale systems because they used them.
Yeah.
And it was a genius idea because not only were they good at support and service, they got the customer. So when someone called in with an issue, and it was usually a server or a bartender or GM, they were talking to a server or a bartender or a GM.
Wow.
So, you know, probably about half our love comes from just our support team and how we launch people, how we get them set up, how we're there to take care of them if they have any issues or questions. It's been a really cool company to learn, cool industry to learn about. And then about a couple years ago, we started saying, hey, we got a great product for craft breweries, but most of our craft breweries are also restaurants. So we had to build a full restaurant point of sale system. I bet this can serve a lot of other industries besides craft beer. So we've expanded into music venues. We're in the Boulder Theater here in Boulder and the Fox and the Aggie. We're expanding into bars and nightclubs. We do restaurants as well. And so just focused on continuing to evolve the product and continue to make sure we build that service DNA into anything that we do. And so as we expand, we make sure we keep that super high touch customer support. And that's the thing I probably hear the most about when I'm out in the industry or talking to people who are running arrived and came to us from other systems, a Toast or Square or whatever. They just talk about the support and the service. If they ever need anything, we're a phone call away, and the people they talk to care about what they're doing and can help them right away. That, in addition to being just an efficient, simple, easy to use product. I joined in May of last year, and I think it was the next month was the craft beer conference in Denver. This is the Mecca for craft beer.
Right.
And, you know, all our customers are there and a lot of other vendors. And I'm walking around wearing an Arrive jacket. And I think I'd been with the company, like I said, a month or so, maybe two. And I had, you know, three or four people over the couple days I was there come and stop me just to tell me how much they loved the company.
That's so cool.
And it was like full on fanboy, like, excuse me. I just want to tell you how much I love your company.
That's so awesome.
And kind of walk away. And I'd be like, wait, wait, come here, talk to me. What is it you love about the company? And half the time it'd be about the product and how simple it was to use. But at least half the time they were naming specific people. You know, when I called in, you know, Hugo's amazing, you know, just answer my question right away. Or, you know, Kaylin's the best. If I ever need anything, I can talk to her and she knows exactly what to do. Just you hired the coolest people. So it was really a special place to work.
And do you still hire people that have come from in this industry?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Across the board, I'd say most of the people here, even engineers, you know, a lot of them, you know, waited tables and younger in their life, or have a love for hospitality. That's something that's just super important to us, is you have to have a passion for food and beverage. You have to have a passion for the industry. You know, I look at our customers as being, you know, pillars of the community.
Yep.
Right, where people go to hang out and congregate and meet other people. And if you don't have a passion for that and love that, it's probably not the right place for you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And then on the support side, for sure. I mean, almost I'd say everybody there was a waiter, bartender, general manager in the industry, because they have to understand our customers to be able to talk to them and help them.
It's a huge, huge plus for y'all. I mean, that is such a big difference maker, because that is, I mean, that support is, you know, you hope things don't go wrong. You hope that, but when they need it, they're talking to somebody that not only understands the product, but just understands what it's like to have their hat on. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Okay. So you started out here, you got a lot of breweries in Colorado quickly. How many did you say you have now?
We're at, so we're 1,800 customers, okay. And you know, roughly 90% of those are breweries.
80 or 90. How many breweries are there now?
About 9,000.
About 9,000.
Yeah. And then there's other things, you know, like non-production tap rooms, like Rayback here in Boulder would be a good example. They don't brew their own beer, but they're rocking, you know, 100 taps of breweries across the region and the country. So those are, that's a core customer group for us as well.
Are breweries, I mean, for a while there, you were just like hundreds of breweries opening all the time. Is that growth continued or is it slowing or?
It's still growing quite a bit. You know, it's nice to be in a sector that's growing and popular. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of breweries are really successful. You know, if you're brewing good beer and have a good location, you're probably going to make a good business.
Yeah. Well, okay. So like you said, you've done really well in South Carolina, like 35% down there. Why is that? Like, how did you, do you have salespeople that are out in the territories or?
A little bit of both. You know, there are certain pockets where craft beer is just more popular than others, right?
Yeah.
And so that's part of it is going into areas where there's a strong craft beer scene. But that's expanded so much. That's kind of most places now.
Yeah.
And then another part of it would just be where we had, you know, particular relationships. So obviously, Colorado, it's our backyard.
Yeah.
Other areas, maybe we would develop a really strong relationship with the local Brewers Guild. Or, you know, unique individual relationships with certain partners that worked with a ton of breweries that loved our product and then would promote us. Or areas, you know, Arkansas, we're big in Arkansas. Our chief people officer grew up there. She's been with the company for a long time was the president and chief growth officer, and she just had a ton of relationships in Arkansas. So through those personal relationships, you know, got the beachhead, and then word would just spread. And so we grew quite a bit there. So it was a little bit of hustle, a little bit of relationships. Those are the areas where we grew more organically. And then now we do have a nationwide sales team, but we're still pretty small.
How many salespeople do you have?
9.
Okay, got it.
And they're, you know, doing some combination of in-person outreach to, you know, brewers in their area, but their territory, as you can imagine, with 9 people is a lot bigger than just where they live. So they're on the phone quite a bit. They're going to events, they're going to conferences to meet with, customers. We get a majority of our sales still comes from people just calling us saying, we want your system and would love a demo because they just heard through the industry, about the product and the team and the support.
Yeah.
So they, you know, spend a lot of their time doing demos and explaining to people, you know, why Arrived is different.
Why is Arrived different? Well, I mean, like, particularly when you have like some of the, you know, your largest competitors that maybe are in there, like, how do you guys go in and are you able to replace your strongest competitors, or is it typically that they've got some tired old legacy system, or?
It's a combination of both. Some of them are running really simple systems that they've outgrown.
Okay.
So maybe when they first started, they were a small countertop and all they needed to do was just take a simple order. And so using something like Square was fine for them.
Okay.
And then they got bigger and they needed to have, you know, more capabilities to allow servers to, you know, walk the floor and take orders from their handheld device without having to run back and forth,
mm-hmm.
right? And swipe the credit card right there at the side of the table. Made service a lot faster and easier and just improved the guest experience. One of the things, like if you go to Avery here locally or any of our customers that are running with the handhelds, it's not uncommon while the server is at your table taking your order for your beer to show up.
Yeah, okay.
And it's a great experience, right? Yeah. And they just sell more beer because they get it out there faster.
Yeah.
So they'll outgrow a system like a Square. Other systems won't have specific features and functionality that are great for breweries. Like we do ounce tracking of every single type of beer you're pouring. So you can calculate how much beer you poured versus how much you made and get a sense of, you know, were people giving away too much free beer or was there some spillage or leakage somewhere in the system? That's really important for our customers. It's a real intuitive system. So with as much turnover as you have in wait staff, to be able to have a system that you can train somebody in 5 minutes to take an order
yep.
and work on the floor is really powerful. And then again, I'd say probably half of it is just knowing that we have this support team that can help you do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
POS systems are complex. There's a lot of different things you can do, a lot of different ways you can configure it, a lot of different reports you can get access to analyze your business and optimize your business. So being able to have somebody that you can call at any point in time and say, hey, is there a way to do this? And have them be able to show you immediately matters a lot. The reliability is huge. You know, the fact that we were founded and built by such capable engineers and have 99.999% uptime matters a lot. You know, if your point of sale system goes down, you're out of business, right? You can't sell. What you're going to do is just start taking cash and write it down on pieces of paper, which people do, but it's hard to do that when you're a busy shop. Our system is just super reliable. And then we built an offline mode, so even if your internet goes down, which does happen, your system doesn't.
Right.
You still take orders, you still run credit cards,
yeah.
And then as soon as the internet comes back up, it sends the credit card orders through. So the guests don't notice the difference, and business just keeps going as usual.
One of the things that you and I talked about when we talked on the phone a couple months ago was the Net Promoter Score, which I had heard of but didn't know a lot about. Explain what that is and why, you know, what your Net Promoter Score is and why it's so high.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Something we're super proud of. So the Net Promoter Score is a real simple way of measuring how likely people are to recommend your product. And then also it kind of gives you positive scores for people who are promoters who promote your product, and the negative scores for people who are your detractors who would say bad things about your product. So the way the metric, and forgive me if people know this, but
I'm going to guess most people listening don't. So okay. I think this is really interesting.
So Net Promoter Score, what you do is you just ask a simple question. On a scale from 1 to 10, how likely are you to promote this product to a friend or colleague? And then you take the sum of the percentage of people that voted at a 9 or a 10. Those are your promoters, the people who are most likely to sing your praises, right?
Yep.
And then you subtract the people that voted a 1 through 6.
Okay.
Those are your detractors. People would likely say bad things about your product. And then 7 or 8 is neutral. Those are kind of your neutrals that might not sing your praises, but won't bash you either.
They're so just kind of neutral.
So they don't count. So the highest score you could have would be 100. So that would be 100% of the people voted it a 9 or 10, or I guess 9 or 10 or 7 or 8, because those would be neutral. No, it would have to be 100%, 9 or 10, for it to be 100 Net Promoter Score. The lowest you could have would be a negative 100, so 100% voted at a 1 through 6.
Okay.
And then by different industries, there are different sort of benchmark Net Promoter Scores. Like if you're dealing with the DMV, I'm sure it's damn near a negative 100, if you're dealing with a well-loved video game, you're be at a Net Promoter Score of like an 80-ish or so. In the point-of-sale industry, I think historically it's been negative because, you know, they say POS is an acronym for something other than point-of-sale.
Because
most people hate their system. Still today, that's like our best sales intro is walking in and saying, what do you think your point of sale system? And normally they bash it. And then you can say, well, let me tell you about what we have to offer. Our Net Promoter Score, depending on the month that we do it, it ranges around 70 to 80, which is crazy for a piece of technology. Like I said, that's more of a Net Promoter Score for a well-loved video game.
Right.
You can dig online and find people that track Net Promoter Scores for other point of sale systems. And, you know, Toast and Square have good products, but Toast is at 25 and Square is at 45. And then ours is, 70 to 80. So we're super proud of that. Super proud of that.
You should be. You said, depending on what month, is that something you track on a monthly basis or?
I think right now we're doing it annually.
Okay.
And when I first got here and they said it was 80, I said, okay, you're first asking people if they love the system. And then if they say yes, you're telling them to, they're like, no, we send it out to all of our customers. And so it's a blanket email we send out. I think we're moving to quarterly,
okay.
To every single customer and just ask that one question. And we get, strong response rates too. Several hundred people end up responding. So yeah, I'm super proud of that.
Should be, man. That's impressive. Okay. So you've got breweries was the initial focus. You've got bars, distilleries, beverage forward type places, venues. how large is that world? Like, let's forget the full service restaurant that, you know, you'll eventually, but like, what's your opportunity?
Yeah, you're getting into the 100,000 plus when you add all those together, hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Restaurants are around 800,000. So that's the 800 pound gorilla.
Yeah.
And we do have a lot of restaurants now. It's just not our core focus.
Yeah.
Currently we're staying focused on the beverage forward locations. That's our history. That's our roots. We're good at maximizing your drink sales. Piques the interest of a lot of restaurants too, because you know most restaurants make their money off the drinks.
Yeah,
But we're currently mostly focused on beverage forward locations. So for sure, craft breweries, non-production tap rooms, like I said, that look just like a brewery, at least in the tap room. They just don't brew their own beer. Bars, nightclubs, music venues have been a cool new market for us as well.
Have you been down to Velvet Elk yet?
Yeah, for sure.
That's a cool place.
It's a great place. I saw a neat little band there a few weeks ago.
So you came in a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Guys found this business. It's growing. It's doing really well. And they're like, okay, I guess you get to a point where you're like, we can get it so far, but we need somebody that's a seasoned CEO, somebody that knows how to take us. Is that how that, like, is that why somebody like you comes in, Lauren?
That's typically the case. Yeah. And that's, that was, you know, had good conversations with the investors of the company and the founders, and they were just at a scale where wanted to bring someone in that was, you know, had experience growing a business from where we are now to the next phase, because it's just different skill set from going to zero to one.
Sure.
And hats off and all the commendations I could offer to the people that started it, because I think zero to one is a lot harder than 1 to 10, you know, getting it off the ground, figuring out what the product is, finding your first customers, making them happy. That's the grind. That's the really hard work. And the team knocked it out of the park. And then I enjoy, and I think I'm better at going to that next phase of, we got something that's working. What's the best way to scale it? And what's the best way to grow it? And how do we build the team to be able to do that? Attract investors. And
there's got to be some balance in there. Like if you're going to scale and you're going to achieve some nonlinear growth, but then your roots are all in customer service and support and simple product, like that sounds like the nuts and bolts of actually pulling that off are not easy. And that's probably why is that what you think about? Like,
for sure.
You can't lose that part. Like, to keep a net promoter score that high, you got to crush it with service.
Yep.
Yep. All along.
Yeah. And, you know, it was one of the first things we talked about is a lot of companies screw up where they do a great job with a small group of customers and a small team. And you get to another point there. It's all about growth and scale.
Mm.
And then they lose that soul, right? They lose that authenticity. They lose that customer forward DNA. And I was curious about it. And I was like, you know, I know Zappos in the early days had this crazy high net promoter score. They were known for their support. And I know people still love them. So I looked online to see what their net promoter score was in the beginning and kind of what it is now. And they were up there at like 80 in the beginning, and they're still there. So you can
do it.
And that's got to be the goal, is how do we scale that? And, you know, fortunately, there's a lot of people in the hospitality industry that are super excited about, you know, migrating to the technology industry. You know, you get a little older after waiting tables for a while, and you maybe start having kids, and you're like, I can't be working until 2 a.m. or I can't be working until midnight anymore.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to be, you know, I want to be home for my kids. So if I can find more of a daytime job. So fortunately, that is an area that I feel very comfortable and confident we'll be able to scale with the same kind of love and care and attention, because we found that sweet spot of great support people who love the industry but want to serve it in a different way.
One of the things with... One of the things with point of sale companies, particularly some that have grown very fast in short periods of time, is they become a very well-oiled sales organization. There are oftentimes, you know, things that customers are told in the conversation, and the contract winds up being different, and or, you know, and y'all don't have contracts. Is that right? Is it monthly pricing or?
We have a contract, but there's no teeth to it. You can leave whenever you want.
You can leave whenever you want.
And
yeah.
we are exploring with giving people the option if they want to get custom contracts or custom rates, and they're big enough that we may negotiate with that, but then give them the option if they want to do a contract. But, you know, we have to have a contract since we're also a credit card processor, but we allow you to leave at any point in time.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about that, but I'm super proud of that, is even with our competitors will lock people into 2 or 3 year contracts.
Well, that's what I was
going to
get
board.
At, yeah.
We don't. And our churn is like, you know, we have like 99.5% of our customers stay with us from a month to month basis, which is unheard of in this industry. But I think where you're going with that was like, how do you make sure as you're growing and pushing sales, you don't oversell and underdeliver? And that's really important to us because, you know, it's a quick way to ruin a brand. You know, we talk about internally a lot. It takes a long time to build this kind of brand reputation we have.
Yeah.
It takes a long time. It
takes a really long time.
And it takes a day to lose it.
That's right.
It takes a day to lose it. You do one thing really bad or stupid, even if it's an honest mistake.
Yeah.
And then guess what? It takes you a long time to rebuild.
Like right.
You know, everyone's going to make mistakes, and we make honest mistakes too. Or maybe, you know, as reliable as our technology system is, everybody has a bug that gets through QA, right? And if that happens in a bad way, then, you know, it's going to take you a long time to rebuild. So we spend a lot of time and energy on protecting our brand and making sure we have a box that defines our values, and we will never do anything outside of that box. Yeah. We want to grow as big a business as possible. It's got to be within the box of those values, right? Because otherwise it's against our values, which doesn't feel good. And then two, you damage the brand and you damage the business. So, you know, currently our sales force is all internal. We're not using third-party resellers. We're not using aggressive resellers that maybe don't care about the brand. They're just trying to get a commission on the sale and get in and out. No, we watch that really closely and manage that internally. And the salespeople are then handing it over to our launch team, who launches it. And if there's ever a hint of overselling and under-delivering, that's handled immediately.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't fly. You know, doesn't fly. If the launch people are launching and someone says, "Well, I thought your system did whatever," you know, that is not what we want to do. We even go as far as if we have cool features that are coming down the road, and we know in 2 or 3 months we're launching something, and we know that's a great sales tool, we won't use it in the sales pitches. We don't sell things until we have it. So we don't go out there and say, "Hey, in 2 months, this feature is coming out. I know it's the one thing you want." We wait till we have it out before we do it.
You got to have a good group of patient investors that are bought into that too. I mean, cause it's, you know, like top line is like, it tends to be the, you know, what people are pushing for with fast growing software companies, just grow sales, grow sales, grow sales. And that's great. But, that can come back to have, you see issues later.
Yep.
I mean, we're seeing with some, I hear it from some of your competitors. I won't say by name, but you start to hear like, yeah, they were great in sales, but now we're starting to see that, you know, so that's cool, man. I mean,
we have smart investors, you know. Yeah. Fortunately, we are still growing fast, so they're pleased with our top line sales growth. But they also understand, you know, there's that short term greedy versus long term greedy, right? Short term greedy, you grow fast and make money in the short term, but then it goes away because you tarnish your brand and your reputation. And there's long term greedy. It's like, no, I want to take care of my brand and my reputation, my product and my customers. So we continue to grow for a long time, right? And do it in a way where people want to stay with our system. So smart investors, I think, get that. And we're lucky we have smart investors.
What's the thing that like your biggest challenge right now?
You know, everybody's worried about the macroeconomic environment, right? So I don't pretend to have a crystal ball on this, but I know a lot of people smarter than me and almost all of them are predicting this won't be like 2001 or 2008. It won't be a quick drop and then a quick rebound. It's going to be, you know, protracted, you know, so a year or two of maybe it gets worse and maybe it stays down for a while. So that's concerning. You know, we want to make sure, you know, our customers are set up for success during that. So far, so good, where people are still going to our customers. You know, we watch sort of same store growth year over year and the numbers are good. So we're not seeing a lot of our customers lose, foot traffic and sales and volume. So that's good news. But there's a concern if it gets worse, do people maybe instead of going to the brewery to eat and drink, buy a six pack of beer for less or whatever.
Right.
But so far that hasn't materialized, but that's definitely one thing we're thinking about. We're spending a lot of energy on the guest engagement side of things. You know, I mentioned, you know, our founders from the beginning wanted to focus more on guests being able to order and pay through their phone. Took us a while to get there to where the rest of the world caught up with their vision. That's a really powerful tool for us right now. And we've launched our first version of that and have proven through data. So a location that was just using servers before for everything, once they launch and they're using both, where give the guests the choice, they can start with the server or they can scan the QR code and place their own order and pay on their own. The guests that choose to do it on their own are spending 25% more than the ones that are just going through the server. And our theory, and from digging into the data and also watching this in action, is, you know, we've all had that point when you're at a restaurant and your beer's empty and your buddy's isn't, and you're looking around and you want to order another beer, but they're slammed, and
right.
It takes a server maybe 3-4 minutes to get there. That's a long 3-4 minutes when you want another beer, right?
Yeah.
And we've all had that experience where you want another beer, and by the time the server can get to you, you're like, you know what, I'm done with my meal and we're about to leave. And so you don't order that extra beer. But if you take away that friction completely, people order the extra beer. And as we said earlier, and everybody in the hospitality knows, that's where all your profits are on your drinks.
Yep.
So I think that's a game changer. So we're spending a lot of time and energy on evolving that experience and making it as seamless and fluid as possible to give our customers the options to use it or not use it, and then to choose how much they want to use it, and then to also give their guests the choice as well. We have some customers that all they have is counter service plus ordering via your phone, and that's it. They don't have any servers. It's just countertop or at the table. There's a big one in Thousand Oaks, California, outside of LA, called Tarantula Hill. And before they had this, it was just counter service. So everybody would go up to the counter and order and then sit down at the table. Go up to the counter and order, sit down at the table. Now that they launched this service, we've calculated they've increased their sales over $1 million just from allowing guests to order right away at the table. Now, granted, it's a big operation. So,
yeah, sure.
And guests love it. Owners love it. And then we have other customers like Avery down the street, full service model. So they've got servers. They've got the counter. And they've got, you can order via guests if they want to. And they first launched this where they said, you know, we're such a service-driven model. We don't want guests ordering on their own in the main areas. So let's just do it out on the bar, barrels. They have barrel service out in the lawn where while you're waiting for a table, you can hang out at the barrel. But people would have to go to the counter to order while they were out there. The servers couldn't get out there enough because they didn't have enough staff to cover it. So they just launched it on the barrels. Sales skyrocketed. So then they launched it in the server area as well. And I like the model of just guest choice, whatever the guest wants to do.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm also try to be humble enough to know that I don't know all of my customers' business models. Some may have a business model where they don't want any guests ordering because it's, you know, fine dining or just super high touch and someone's right around your shoulder at all points in time anyway. And then others may say, look, I can't even hire wait staff anyway. So yeah. Let's just go to let guests order or go to the counter service and then everything in between. But the data is super inspiring in terms of increased sales, guest satisfaction. And then we thought this would happen, but we didn't know if it would happen. The tips actually went up as well. Because when you can prompt them, you know, do you want to tip 18, 20, 22%?
Yeah.
They tip higher on right. average than if they're just doing the math in their own head.
Yep.
And we've seen, you know, typical location to be 16% is the average tip. And then after they launch this, it's closer to 20. So plus a server can cover more tables. Plus, as we said, the average revenue per ticket goes up. So you're getting a higher percentage on a higher base. So servers make more money. Guests are happier. Owners sell more and have sales go up. So I think that's going to continue to accelerate. And I think we have a good product and a great team to be leaders in that and make it just a phenomenal experience for everybody. So super excited about that.
Well, Is there anything else you want to talk about? Anything else that is on your mind, or anything you want to share for people listening to this? Because I know we have I want to respect your time.
Yeah. Well, just related to what we were just talking about, it's interesting to watch how opinions vary on that, on the guest pulling out their phone and using that to order or pay. And I think to some degree, it's somewhat generational, like younger generations right away. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, of course I get it right away. And, you know, I might be kind of in that middle generation where some people my age don't like it and some people love it. And then older generations, have sort of an adverse reaction. I think to some degree it could be different, like geographically too. Like we've noticed in areas, for example, if you get up into, the Midwest, where a lot of jobs were lost through technology, there might be an immediate adverse reaction to it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we don't think you have to actually lose jobs. You're just empowering servers to cover more tables and make more sales and make more tips. And we've actually proven that with data. And then when I was talking with a buddy of mine about this, he's younger than me and from the gaming industry and just super techie, right? And he said he and his friends were vacationing, actually riding out COVID in Honolulu. And there was a noodle shop that they went to that the owner just had a smart kid who developed their own technology for it and integrated it with their own POS system so they could do guest ordering and paying. And he said they chose to go there because it was just so easy. You know, you could everybody could order on their own, split the tab, automatically. And they were there to hang out with each other more than talk with servers anyway. So they just were uninterrupted and hanging out with their friends. And he said they actually chose that location over the other ones, even though the food was about the same, just because they love that experience. So it's interesting to watch how different people feel about this and to think about how that's going to migrate. And I guess one of the things we talk about and with the people who we think are doing the best job of managing this transition is they talk about the difference between service and hospitality. You know, hospitality is the human to human interaction, right? It's telling them about what your favorite things are. It's sitting down at the table and hanging out, you know, if the guests want that, right? It's being human and being a host, right? Being a gracious host, just like if someone comes to your house. And I waited tables in 5 restaurants when I was younger. You know, I talked about when I was a ski bum in Vail, I waited tables. The fun stuff is that, right?
Yeah.
But once it gets to the point where you're like, did you say red sauce or green sauce? You know, the humanity's lost. That's the service element. Or when you're walking by and somebody's like, excuse me, you know, nobody likes being hailed and nobody likes hailing somebody else, but sometimes you have to. If you can take that service element and let the technology do that, but let the hospitality still be human, you know, like I could, even the places where our customers, where the guests are still ordering and paying on their own, have people walk on the floor to hang out and talk, have people, you know, check on them and see how they're doing. Have people also have, you know, our handhelds to take the order as well. So, you know, maybe when they're 3/4 of the way done with their drink, you stop and say, would you like another, and prompt them in a little advance to increase sales and anticipate their drink before they anticipate their drink.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a really important thing in our industry is thinking about the separation between hospitality and service. You can maybe automate service in ways that are better for everybody, owners, guests, and servers, but you can't automate the hospitality. That's the human element, and I think that's where some people I've seen miss the boat, is where they try to make it too automated with kiosks on the table, or you know, it's too tech focused, and then you just lost the soul, you lost the hospitality.
I mean, you always look at it like a barbell. Like McDonald's can eventually probably have like one person in there, like, you know, operating the machines, like that make the burgers and flip the burgers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like somebody that's like, just can deal with issues. Great. Fine. But then over on this other side here, that human element that we've always wanted, we've always had in hospitality. We're always going to want that. And what, you know, and I agree, like if you can free your good people up to be able to be doing more of this engagement, not hustling around like because we're low on staff and just trying to keep up, and then like they can't even like leverage their best skill set, which is like making 100%. People feel happy and welcome and warm
100%.
And read the guest and know like these people need attention, these people want to be like
That's what you want your best people to do. Well, I mean, that's what, you know, it's like if you're in your home, right? Like that's what hospitality is. Like, how would you treat the people in your home? You're not going to just be like, all right, everybody just touch a screen. You know, like, no, you're going to, but if you can make the, you know, the processing, everything efficient in your home, you would do that because you just want to have that engagement with your friends.
I think about, you know, think about like on the fine, what you can learn from fine dining. You know, you've got the maitre d'. They're not taking your order, but they're making, you know, or the owner that's walking around and talking to you. And, you know, when it comes time to get the wine, they bring the sommelier over, right? And who's just the expert on the wine. Yeah. So I envision it being more like you can have food and drink sommeliers, right? They're not as much taking your order, but they're there telling you what's the best stuff. They're talking about how they brewed that beer, or what's going on with this dish and why it's special. And they're getting to know you on the human level to do the hospitality. But the service, you can automate that to some degree.
Yep. Yep. Dude, I appreciate this. This is really cool, man. You guys have a great business. All the interactions that I've had with y'all have been great. The interactions with my, you know, our mutual customers, just amazing. Like, I hear so many positive things about Arrive. So I appreciate the chance to just come out here and wrap with you and share the story.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
Enjoyed it myself.
That's a wrap. Thank y'all.